Welcome to the Maris Review. I'm Maris Kreisman, and I'm so delighted to be joined today by Zakiya Dalila-Harris, who spent nearly 3 years in editorial at Knopf Doubleday before leaving to write her debut novel, The Other Black Girl. Prior to working in publishing, she received her MFA in creative writing from the New School. Her essays and book reviews have appeared in Guernica and The Rumpus. She lives in Brooklyn. Welcome, Zakiya.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here with you today.
I'm so excited to talk to you about this wonderful book. And as I mentioned before I pressed record, like there are so many ways to jump into this. I'm wondering if you have a strategy for publishing this book about what it's like to be a Black girl alone, sort of in publishing, in book publishing, who has to figure out when it's someone's job to speak up. And I wonder when you started to write this book and if you feel like we're at an inflection point now in book publishing. Talk to me.
Yes. So many things, all the things. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess I'll start with talking a little bit about, yeah, just where the idea for the book came from. I mean, yep. So I worked in editorial for 2.5-3 years, was first an editorial assistant and then was promoted to assistant editor a couple years in. And I mean, when I started working in publishing, I was really excited about the idea of editing and like working with authors. So I'd done my MFA program and I'd gotten really into talking about books and structure and stories and writing and like what makes a piece tick, like all of those good things. But I also have wanted to be a writer when I went into publishing. So, I mean, I always had that kind of like monkey on my back, I guess. I don't know if people say that anymore, but I did monkey, but also at times it was hard to, of course, do both. And so for a while I would try to freelance and also do that, try to, you know, move up in the editorial world and publishing. But of course, all at the same time, I was constantly aware of how few Black people, Black women worked in publishing. I didn't have it as bad as Nella did in my book. Nella is the only Black girl. I was not the only Black person on my floor, but I was one of two. And the other was a male Black editor who had been there for a very long time. So we had different worlds, right? Different generations. Mm-hmm. And so I had a moment in the bathroom when I was about I was already thinking about if I wanted to really work in editorial for my life and, you know, mid 20s, I guess at that point, like, what am I going to do? And so I had this interaction in the bathroom. Well, no interaction. I ran into another young Black woman in the bathroom who I knew wasn't an author. I think she had a work badge or something. And I remember feeling an array of emotions, like confusion, excitement, wonder. We didn't talk, but I went back to my desk and I just had more emotions, thinking about the emotions I just had of like, wow, you were really hoping like, yeah, we're Black and we're here moment. And so I went back to my desk and I started writing that first chapter where Nella's thinking about, you know, she's sitting in a cubicle and she's smelling these things and wondering if there's another Black girl on the floor. And so that was very much like, that was a very big, obvious moment. But before that, I had been, when I did my MFA, I was writing nonfiction personal essays. And I was always really thinking about my race and I had my own racial renaissance, if you will, where I was really thinking about my childhood because like my protagonist, I grew up in Connecticut around mostly white people for most of my young life. So I was very much aware and thinking of these issues of what it's like to be the other because I've been so used to that for most of my life.
Absolutely. And Nella says in passing that it would be nice to have a work wife, and who doesn't need a work wife? And
right.
Just someone who kind of gets where you're coming from.
Totally. And you know, again, I have to say I had it better than Nella because I had a few work wives who I'm still in touch with today, but no, I didn't have a Black work wife or like a Black person. I mean, I was able to find other people and other imprints, but it's not quite the same. You know, you can't just like go to their desk and just complain. And again, like I said, my work wives got it. And a lot of them were all on the same page about wanting change. But again, it's just not quite the same, you know.
Aurait is a fine jewelry brand founded by women for women. Pieces range from classic to statement to completely original. Aurait makes the jewelry you've always wanted but could never find. Aurait's gold feels substantial and the diamonds sparkle and shine, such high quality and so beautiful. Because Aurait sells directly to you without the middleman markup, they can offer the same quality as traditional Fifth Avenue brands at a fraction of the cost. Ethically sourced and sustainably made, their gold is never mined, and their gemstones and diamonds are also certified conflict-free. Aurait is looking to set the standard for women because they deserve the best, always reminding them to set the gold bar high. For 15% off your first Aurait purchase, go to auraitnewyork.com/MarisReview and use promo code MarisReview. That's AURATE NewYork.com/MarisReview. One of the things I really loved about the book was how you made the real drudgeries of the day-to-day life as an assistant really entertaining.
Thank you.
I've found that it's hard to convey to someone who doesn't work in book publishing all of the different kinds of skills that you need to be just an assistant earning a small salary. You're expected to be like a therapist and a copy editor and so many different things.
Yes. I mean, even, you know, when you strip away, because I think about this book a lot, and I think about Nella, of course, obviously I think about this book a lot, but I think a lot about Nella and how, of course, I mean, her race and her, the way she perceives the world really affects the way that we perceive the story through her eyes. But I also know that working in an editorial assistant position or any entry-level position comes with, like you said, I mean, you have to be a therapist, you have to be able to read people, you have to meet demands from every single person, from the wonderful production people all the way to, you know, frontward facing. So you're constantly doing this kind of managing of expectations, period, no matter who you are, essentially. Yeah. I mean, every imprint's different. So when you take that and then you add, of course, all of the microaggressions and the sheer knowledge of looking at the table and not seeing anyone who looks like you, like, even if you don't constantly think about that, that is something that your body knows, like something underneath all of your facade, no matter how hard you try, no matter how much you try to tune it out, that you know, you're aware of that. You know that the space, something is wrong with the space. Like the space, the fact that you're the only one or one of a few, it's like, what's going on there?
You get into also this really prevalent idea in publishing that like, there's a way it's always been done. And yes. Therefore there's this unwritten code that everyone is expected to know and to adhere to. And it's just, maybe that worked back in the days when book publishing wasn't a corporate enterprise so much as like a thing rich people did for fun. You know?
Exactly. Exactly. No, and I think that's a great point, because I think that was the thing for me personally that really got under my skin the most, in terms of like, you know, looking at where I was working, looking at where a lot of other people were working, like editorial assistant jobs are difficult. Like we mentioned how there are so many tools you have to have, but like a lot of those are like not things that you get from just having a degree or getting going to the Columbia publishing program. Like these are things that, you know, you can find in other places, and we can hire more diverse people. Like, why are we pretending like you have to have gone to this school or that school to like be able to do the job? Because I didn't go to Ivy League schools, and I'm not trying to dismiss them, because they're of course very important. But like, I had no experience in publishing. I'd never even done an internship in publishing in like this corporate space. But I was able to navigate that world, and I think did a really good job at it. So I think that it felt really too easy to be like, well, the people aren't out there because this. And it's like, well, no, like, look beyond people that you know. Like, there are people who don't even know this is a career option. Yeah. And also pay them better than get me started. But there are a lot of factors. But and I'm not saying that it's easy to diversify publishing. Of course, like, I think if it were, it would have been done a while ago. Mm-hmm. But I really think it's like a matter of restructuring the way that what we value and what we think is important. People skills, honestly, I think are the most important thing to have when you're in these kinds of positions.
You don't have to scroll very far down your newsfeed to find a story about the restorative effects of collagen. It's all the rage, but it's way more than just hype. Get the very best collagen on the market from Ancient Nutrition. Ancient Nutrition has one goal: transform the health of every individual on the planet with history's most powerful superfoods. Whether you want to improve your body, sharpen your mind, or just feel like your best self, Ancient Nutrition makes supplements that get real results you can see and feel. All Ancient Nutrition products are made from the highest quality ingredients and are rigorously and repeatedly tested for purity. Their best-selling multi-collagen protein powder includes 5 types of collagen. It is the first and only collagen on the market with clinically studied ingredients proven to help reduce joint discomfort as early as day 1, improve fine lines and wrinkles after 4 weeks, and transform your overall skin tone after 8 weeks. It's unflavored and dissolves in any liquid, so put a scoop in your morning coffee, smoothie, or even baked goods. Proven formulas for real impact. That's what Ancient Nutrition is all about. And for you, Nares Review readers, right now, Ancient Nutrition is offering 20% off your first order when you go to ancientnutrition.com and enter the promo code Maris at checkout. That's ancientnutrition.com. Enter promo code Maris for 20% off your first order. One more time, ancientnutrition.com. Enter promo code Maris at checkout. Now, back to the show.
I mean, when I was an assistant long time ago, I'd always hear about how it's an apprenticeship. I feel like that's such a weird way to describe, like, yes, there are some things you can only learn on the job.
Right. But
that doesn't mean you have to have the prerequisites for the apprentice. Like, getting the apprenticeship is the training.
It's the chicken and the egg. It's like, you can't have the experience until someone gives you a shot, someone takes a chance on you. And I was fortunate to have people take a chance on me, but I also checked a lot of other boxes that a lot of other people haven't had, like other people of color haven't had the opportunity to check. So like, I still, and I mentioned this in the book with Mela's like reservations about her UVA person helping get her a job in publishing. And like, I had a similar thing through the New School. Someone I studied under, wonderful, you know, knew that, or she mentioned something about my writing, was like, I never have to edit you. And like, for me, that's like, even then I was like, yes, I love to hear that. Which isn't true. I have to be edited very often with other things. But yeah, she was like, are you interested in publishing? And I was like, am I interested? Like, I've been trying to apply. I haven't been able to get anything. Like, no one's, I've never heard of her back. And then a few months later, I think she came through, and without that connection, I don't know if I would have, we'd be here today.
And I mean, same, and but not same, obviously. And it seems as though from Black Lives Matter, there came this movement to publishing companies have diversity initiatives and have them have town halls. And do you think the methods of trying to find people to work in publishing are changing at all?
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
You know, I'm not sure, only because I of course, quit.
Yeah.
I mean, I also, and these initiatives have been in the works for even before last year, but I do think a lot of the conversations around George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, specifically in the publishing world, did spark, at least in 2020, like a movement toward hiring more diverse people and all of that good stuff. I don't know. I mean, it depends on the day you ask me, to be honest. I do feel like, I mean, even with this book, I can't help but feel hopeful, like the fact that we're having conversations like this, and that, you know, when I was trying to find a publisher, I was having these conversations with everybody about their offices and how it made them think about their conversations, their own prejudices. And so I do sometimes think there are changes, and I know that, there are, like, where I worked, don't quote me, but I know that some of the people that I worked with when I was on the diversity committee then, they're still making moves and, like, trying from their homes, and which I really admire. I think it's important. And the thing is, I don't know, you know, once we're back in the office, I think that's when we'll really know, because I really do think that, like, face-to-face, we're all sitting in this room. I think accountability is just way easier when you're physically in a space with someone. But I have heard of places doing not resume blind, but like looking at other criteria besides, you know, what's on a resume. So that gives me hope. And also just places that I have heard that are at least talking about, or at least before the pandemic, we're talking about, you know, going to schools and talking to, like I mentioned earlier, like people who don't even know that this is an occupation option. But yeah, and then that always makes me think about the pay. Like, but the pay is not sustainable, but who knows, maybe with virtual, it'll change the publishing world a little bit for the better and maybe make it a little more accessible. I don't know.
I hope so, that not every single person who works in publishing has to live in New York City. That's a big hurdle.
When I was working in publishing, I was often also doing other jobs, like freelancing, it's kind of hard to live off of a publishing wage, depending on who you are and where you live. Big hurdle.
Yeah. One of the things that I am most encouraged by is seeing employees starting to come together to call out publishers on bad business decisions.
Yes.
We can talk as little or as much about this as you would like, but I do think the question that just about everyone right now is grappling with is, who is required to speak up when something very evil is being published?
Yeah.
Realm is the audio entertainment company that features original fiction podcasts, including official continuations of popular franchises to create expansive, diverse, and immersive shows. Orphan Black, the next chapter, drops weekly from Realm every Friday, with the season finale coming up on June 11th. Starring Emmy Award-winning actress Tatiana Maslany, Realm presents the official continuation of the hit TV series Orphan Black. Maslany voices all 8 clones, including the OG clones and some new faces. It's been 8 years since Project Leda was destroyed for good, but when a dangerous genetic technology is stolen and an unknown clone appears, Cosima and the other clones are forced to struggle for survival. Since their victory against Project Leda, the original Sestras, Sarah, Allison, Cosima, and those they love have been free to live quiet, anonymous lives, but that anonymity comes at a cost. Cosima is unable to pursue the cutting-edge science that saved her life. Sarah's daughter, Kira, is suffocated by her mother's insistence on secrecy. And Charlotte, the youngest Leda clone, questions why her family gets to survive while other unaware clones get sick and die. Everything changes when Vivi Valdez, a CIA agent, discovers she too is a clone and goes rogue. Vivi's pursuit of the truth brings chaos to the original clone club when one of them is accused of murder. To prove their innocence, they must step out of the shadows and publicly claim the secret they've sacrificed everything to protect. Otto Straddle says, if you loved Orphan Black, you'll love this. And I always feel so sorry for the employees who have to do the organizing because they are in most vulnerable positions.
Yeah, definitely. I agree.
And of course, the authors too. I want to say this explicitly, like it's not your job.
I know. And I think like with my book, I definitely had that in the back of my mind, not even the back, it was in the forefront of my mind too. Just with Nella's, like, do I speak up? Why should I have to do this? Why is this my responsibility? Like, those are all things that the answer to those questions is very difficult. And I think
so
that,
yeah,
it's emotionally taxing. And so, especially when you're trying to do a job or trying to, you know, publish a novel, your first novel. it's tricky.
Yeah. My default is like, make Stephen King do it.
People will listen.
Talk to me a little bit more about Nella, and even just, I assume it was a very deliberate decision to call her Nella, and yes, what her life is like in the novel.
Yeah, so, right, exactly. When I started writing this book, I was reading Passing by Nella Larson for the very first time, and Nella is named after Nella Larson, because I think I didn't realize it exactly when I first started reading the book and then writing my own book, but rereading Passing now, I'm like, wow, there are so many. I was really channeling a vibe and gaslighting to the highest power. So so Nella is a 26-year-old editorial assistant. She lives in Brooklyn, does that commute to Manhattan every day to work at Wagner Books, which is a very fancy schmancy, very white publishing house. And she has been the only Black person for a couple years, and you know, it's fatigued in a lot of ways with having to speak for all of the Black people, all of the world. but at the same time, she's also got this dream. She wants to be an editor. She wants to be the Black editor that Wagner Books does not have, that Wagner Books had once upon a time, 30 years earlier. I'll get back to that. She's got these two sides of her kind of competing. And then when Hazel, another young Black woman who was born and raised in Harlem, starts working in the cubicle next to hers, Nella is super excited. She's like, okay, great. Like, finally, I don't have to code switch with you the way that I do with all of my white coworkers. She hopes that they'll be able to have these conversations, connect over Black hair, Black music, all that stuff. Series of very unfortunate events start happening at the office, I'll say. And Nella starts to wonder if Hazel is really all that she seems. So we just see kind of Nella's own, where it takes place mostly in Nella's head, a third person close. And we kind of just see her trying to navigate these. First, it was two worlds, and now this world of Hazel and this competition, but also friendship and just all the fun female relationship workplace stuff.
Yeah. And you mentioned this briefly, but that she has this earlier model of like of what success could have looked like, I guess,
yes,
from Kendra Ray and Diana. Do you want to tell me about Burning Heart, the novel, and how you decided to portray that that work of fiction that is also fictional.
So Burning Heart is essentially the book that I think I wanted to see in the world. Burning Heart is essentially about this young Black woman who has lived a very sheltered life, and she suddenly gets flipped up in the Black Panther Party, and that's the synopsis of this fictional book. And I think it's kind of funny, the more I think about it, I was really thinking about, I've always been really interested in like the Black Panther Party and the ways in which people can be conditioned especially after experiencing so much trauma, witnessing so much trauma. And like, I've always thought a lot about the Black Panther Party and just like radicalism in general, and how like, just how movements can sweep people up and change people and really influence them. And so this book was one that I was like, oh, I feel like this could be a kind of like Oprah Book Club pick book in this alternative reality. And Nella, of course, who really isn't a radical person in a lot of ways, she of course loves this book. She was gifted this book, Burning Heart, in high school, loved it, wrote a thesis on it, like she's all about it. And part of what drives her to love it is also the fact that the author is Black, a Black woman, and the editor is a Black woman. And Kendra Ray was the editor who worked on Wagner Books, and Diana Gordon was the writer, author of Burning Heart. So I included this book because I mentioned my own fascination with like, I think the way people can get swept up. But I also think that, I mean, I don't want to give too much away about the book, but the book is a lot about how we, you know, how Black people, all the different ways we respond to oppression, the way we respond to racism, lack of diversity, like all of those things. And so Burning Heart for me kind of was a way to see that in a little more obviously with this idea of someone being swept up and being just kind of transforming their beliefs. Because beliefs again are at the core, I think, of this novel. And it's funny though, because when I first wrote this book, I mentioned the book is mostly through, a lot of it's through Nella's perspective, third person. But after the first draft, I was like, and it was only her. I only had Nella's voice. But after the first draft, I was like, you know, I really need something else here. Like, Wagner is really oppressive. Sometimes Nella can be a little too much in her head, maybe. Like, I should add these other voices. And the more I added them, the more I really thought about how the other women, Kendra Ray and Diana, and then Shawnee, third Black woman whose voice is here in the novel, how all of them relate to Nella's story. And I think for me as a Black woman, I've always looked back to people in the past generations that came before me to kind of make sense of the present. I think about my parents and how they related to the world when they were my age, my grandparents. When I was in publishing, I thought of Toni Morrison, having worked in publishing. I think those beacons are like really important for everyone, but I think especially with us, of like this idea that like you were able to make this work in a time that was way harder, relatively speaking, than now. And so I wanted to get at that kind of positivity, but then also the kind of the trauma, really, of like the fact that things haven't changed that much in a lot of ways. So, and Nella doesn't know Kendra Ray's full story, although the reader will get to see most of Kendra Ray's full story. So I also wanted to play with kind of what we know versus what Nella knows, because in the real world, like if we were Nella, we wouldn't know everything. We wouldn't know the whole story. We would romanticize the past in the way that she does.
Of course, we need to hold on. It really is, you do such a great job of showing us that in 30 years.
Thank you.
Gotta try harder. And tell me a little bit about, of course, having been an editorial assistant, what is it like to work with an editor and her assistant as an author?
It's a dream. I mean, my editor, Lindsay Sagnetta Atria, is incredible. I'd never had an editor. I'd written pieces, I'd had people edit my work, but not in this way of it being like a really full-fledged relationship of like, you're like, I, and especially since this is my first book, I I really wasn't sure what to expect. I knew what I wanted in like a reader, but Lindsay has been amazing. And I mean, having worked on Gone Girl, having worked with so many incredible writers, to have someone look at my work and engage with it on like every single, like literally every single level was my dream. I couldn't have asked for a better experience. And I mean, her assistant Fiora is also wonderful. Like, I wish we could have worked together back today in this way, because they're just, it's a really great team. And I think, you know, again, I think a lot of people working in publishing want to do this, or to be on the other side. And I just feel really lucky to have been able to make that switch, because I know it's not easy. It's not an easy thing to do.
It's not easy, but you really did it.
And I still can't believe it. I'm like, what? What's coming out soon? But
Zakiya, before we say goodbye, I would love to know if you have any book recommendations for us.
Yes. So I would say Raven Leilani's Lester. I finished it a little while ago now. I don't remember what month it was, but it was earlier this year, and I still think about it. I still think about Edie. It's heartbreaking, and also I saw myself way too many times in that book, and it's just so, it's reaffirming, but also just really devastating in a lot of ways, and beautiful. So highly recommend Lester. And then of course, Passing, which I mentioned earlier, by Nell Larson, came out in the 1920s. And it's a book mainly about two women, very, very light-skinned women who are able to pass. And one of them is married to a white man who has no clue. Tension, subtext, drama, all the works. And I can't say enough how much that book influenced me. And also just like, it's a really good beach read because it's a novella, I believe. So you can read it in one sitting practically. And then let's see, I'm looking at my
sure,
bag of books next to me. I have so many things I can't wait to read. There's one actually probably at my computer, which is A Sign of Love, I promise. Mm-hmm. I just started reading All Her Little Secrets by Wanda M. Morris. It starts with a Black female lawyer finding her white, I believe he's her boss, who she's also been having an affair with. She finds him dead, and that's the beginning, and I'm still here for whatever's going to happen. It's a thriller, and I love workplace dynamics are, of course, my jam. So
yeah, they certainly are. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Maris Review, and check the show notes for the books we discussed on here today. And please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.